Thanks, Lauren, and thanks everybody for coming. So I'm going to talk about hepatitis C prevention from the perspective of harm reduction with a focus on preventing transmission amongst injection drug users. Injection drug users are the single largest group when we look at transmission rates for hepatitis C. And there's a number of factors to consider. Hepatitis C is significantly more infectious than HIV when we look at transmission through shared syringes and injection equipment. We have high prevalence rates among injection drug users. For people who've been injecting for several years, they can be upwards of 65-70% or higher. And what we see is that whereas with HIV, you can prevent a significant amount of transmission simply by providing adequate sterile syringe access, because most transmission that happens through injection equipment happens through the syringes. With hepatitis C, there's a significant amount of transmission that appears to be attributable to other kinds of injection paraphernalia, such as cookers, cotton. And so that's something that hasn't significantly been addressed simply by syringe access. It's going to take larger kinds of interventions and more thinking. So these are some of the issues why hepatitis C has remained relatively unchecked amongst drug injectors. And amongst those are social and structural drivers of risk that are common to hepatitis C, other bloodborne infections such as HIV, and other kinds of risks such as overdose. A lot of these factors cluster around poverty and racial minorities. In the United States, we see that amongst African Americans and Latinos in particular. Interestingly, we don't see a lot of evidence for higher hepatitis C rates among African American injectors, but we do see some signs of elevated prevalence among Latinos. So there's been a lot of pessimism around the prospects for controlling hepatitis C amongst drug injectors. Unlike hepatitis A and hepatitis B, this is not a vaccine-preventable disease. At this point, there are vaccines in development, but they're very far away. But what we do know is that even in areas that have very high levels of coverage and implemented harm reduction interventions very early, you still see an annual incidence amongst injectors of from 10 to 40%, which is enormous. And you can see that even in areas that seem to have had some level of control or reduction in hepatitis C incidence rates, that there can be periodic spikes or fluctuations. However, we are seeing some signs that prevention may be possible. There does seem to be a trend over the past 20 years for declining hepatitis C incidence in the United States. Though, as the IOM report noted, we don't have really strong epidemiologic data. We don't have a strong infrastructure for monitoring trends in hepatitis C incidence. What we do see is that we had some reports from back in the mid-90s, in particular a study from Baltimore, suggesting that within a year of beginning to inject, injection drug users showed that over 50% had acquired hepatitis C. So there was a sense that at least in that period, in that setting in the mid-90s, hepatitis C acquisition happened very quickly in the beginning of an injection career. More subsequent research shows that there's a longer lag time, there's a longer window of opportunity, so that more recent studies suggested that there's at least 3.5 years between the time that somebody starts injecting and has a 50% chance of having acquired hepatitis C. The challenge is in reaching people very early in those injection careers. It's been very difficult to reach young and new injectors. And what we're seeing is that, while on the whole there is a sense that in the United States injection drug users were an aging population, that the rate of onset or transition to injection drug use had slowed in the 90s, we are seeing reports anecdotally of a new wave of young injectors, particularly people who started out using prescription opiates such as OxyContin and then transitioned to heroin use and injection. And we've seen that in several parts of the United States. So it appears that there is this new cohort of young injectors where we have a limited opportunity to reach them and give them the tools to prevent acquisition of hepatitis C. I'd also note that in the United States, there has historically been a lot of controversy around syringe access and syringe exchange programs. And as most of you probably know, last year Congress finally lifted a federal funding ban on syringe exchange that had been in existence for 2 decades. While we haven't yet seen the real fruits of that policy change, this is the first time that the federal government has really come out in support of syringe exchange as an intervention. Most of this work was done in the HIV context, but it becomes even more important as a cornerstone for hepatitis C prevention. And the work to follow up on that is really about maximizing the opportunities for that policy change to really drive greater coverage and expansion of syringe access. So I'm going to talk about some key public health interventions, many of which have been drawn from the HIV field to address HIV risk among injection drug users. I'll just note very quickly a couple that I haven't included on this list for the sake of time that have been talked about and examined in the context of hepatitis C. One is access to drug treatment, in particular for opioid users, methadone and buprenorphine maintenance. We haven't seen a lot of clear examples that on its own that plays a huge role in controlling hepatitis C and preventing transmission, but we do think that it's a necessary part of the mix to have access to opioid substitution therapy and quality drug treatment. The other intervention that is sometimes talked about but hasn't really been implemented in any major way in the United States are interventions to prevent transition to injection drug use. So among people like the young people that I just talked about who are prescription opioid users, is there work that's possible to do to minimize the chance that they then move on to injecting heroin or other drugs? There's been some preliminary work done on those kind of interventions, mainly in other countries, that hasn't yet really been imported or taken up here. And there's still some questions about efficacy and how to do that without actually increasing the stigma around injection drug use, which then in turn fuels and reinforces risk behavior and risk environments. So in terms of syringe access, there's been a lot of studies that try to correlate participation in a syringe exchange program with a reduced likelihood of acquiring hepatitis C. And for the most part, the results of those studies have been mixed so that it doesn't seem to have a strong individual protective effect. There are some signs that on a community or population level, greater syringe access translates into lower incidence rates across drug injectors. But because, as I noted earlier, part of it isn't just about the syringes, but about sharing other injection equipment, the sense is that syringe exchange as a standalone intervention isn't enough. Part of that is that we don't have enough coverage, even in places in the United States that started syringe exchange early, most of them don't have enough coverage to provide all the syringes that drug injectors need. Another thing is that even when you implement syringe exchange programs, access to these programs can be seriously undermined by the operations of law enforcement, so policing practices. If law enforcement is not aligned with the public health mandate for syringe access, then they can really keep people from accessing syringes, they can harass people, they can arrest people for having syringes. And so there's a lot of work to do. You know, step one is implementing syringe exchange. Step two is aligning it within the community so that there's community and law enforcement support. And then step three is really figuring out how to scale it up to provide the level of coverage that's needed. And that level of coverage is probably going to be higher for hepatitis C than it is for HIV. And without the federal resources, coverage really hasn't been part of the debate on syringe exchange in the United States. With the lifting of the federal funding ban, we hope that we can shift some of those conversations to really talk about rapidly scaling up to achieve high coverage levels, but so far, the studies that don't show a protective effect at the individual level have all suffered from environments where coverage levels have been relatively low and there's been remaining barriers from law enforcement. Antibody testing has not yet proven a clear role in preventing hepatitis C in terms of knowing your status translating into reducing risk behaviors. Now, there hasn't been a lot of research in this area, and there hasn't been a lot of interventions, but there's a lot of issues with the diagnosis of hepatitis C. Again, we see with HIV that people who learn that they have HIV reduce their risk behaviors, their sexual risk, their syringe-sharing behaviors. Hepatitis C, it looks like we're going to have to do some more complicated interventions to really make that diagnosis translate into behavior change. We do have a base from HIV to start thinking about how to apply some of those lessons, though. And I'm going to skip over this in the interest of time. There has also, from a public health intervention perspective, been some large studies looking at individual and group level interventions around aimed at behavior change. What we've seen is that they're successful in lowering reported rates of things like syringe sharing or injection equipment sharing, but we don't know how much those rates have to go down to really have an impact on hepatitis C transmission, so that we see that even when syringe sharing rates go down, the relative incidence of hepatitis C remains the same in those studies when you look at the intervention group versus the control group. Unfortunately, we don't have a really big research base to draw upon here, and there isn't a lot of money to develop and pilot and test new interventions. Okay. Treatment is going to be an even more important consideration starting next year when we expect to have hepatitis C protease inhibitors, which will dramatically increase the success of treatment, hopefully shorten the length of treatment. The question is whether they'll be accessible amongst people with histories of drug use. They still will require interferon and ribavirin, and there's still been limited access to treatment. So as a public health intervention, we don't know whether they'll have an impact on hepatitis C rates. So I'm just going to quickly point to a couple of recommendations in the Institute of Medicine report that Lauren introduced. One is really about scaling up and expanding prevention programs with a particular focus on syringe access. And another is looking at combination approaches. Because as we see, syringe access on its own isn't enough. Hepatitis C testing on its own isn't enough. Behavioral interventions on their own aren't enough, but a combination of these approaches, really intensified and scaled up at a community level, could have a real impact. That impact needs to be assessed and tested and validated, though. Some other things to keep in mind are addressing stigma, developing social marketing and community mobilization campaigns for IDUs as an adjunct to really increase access to these services. So these are our recommendations. We think that there are a lot of opportunities for hepatitis C prevention, but part of it is really elevating it in terms of a priority for public health and really implementing some of the things that we know should contribute to reducing and hopefully eliminating hepatitis C transmission among people who inject drugs. Thank you.